Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. Hello, I'm here today with Christine Lindebeck, founder of Sewing in the City and Lindy Lindy. Christine is a fashion industry veteran and the founder of her own clothing brand, Lindy Lindy. She is also the force behind Sewing in the City, selling fashion sewing patterns online and in shops around the globe. And she inspires people of all ages to sew their own clothes. The story of Christine's creative and entrepreneurial journey is featured in our spring 2024 issue of What Women Create. And Christine is one of those people with a really busy schedule, and we are so honored to have her here today. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I am so excited to be here with you today.
I know the past couple of weeks have been a whirlwind for you. You were teaching at Sew Expo in Seattle, and now you're back home in Spain. Wow, how's it been?
Yes, it's one of those things that it's such a great opportunity to get to travel to Seattle, where I'm originally from. And also I got to teach at Sew Expo. And I grew up going to Sew Expo. That was where I met sewing mentors as a kid. So it's definitely a full circle moment to get to go back there and teach.
And I know in your story, you mentioned falling in love with sewing at a very early age. You were what, 6 years old or elementary school age, right?
Yeah, I don't even remember a time that I didn't sew. So I think I was around 5 or 6. My mom had a sewing machine because she would make a few things for us. So it was definitely around our house. But I kind of think that it was just something that I was a gift that I was born with, because it definitely came naturally.
And I love how you mentioned that your mom was your biggest supporter. She was taking you to workshops, and even some of them were out of state, correct? Like letting you follow your dream.
Yeah. When I was 16 or 17, I went to Alabama because I was really into heirloom sewing, which is very similar to what I get to do today with Lindy Lindy. I studied French sewing, embroidery, smocking, all of the traditional heirloom sewing techniques with a woman named Martha Pullen, who is from Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama. So that was an amazing opportunity that has definitely impacted me all the way till today.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I feel like recently we've had a number of artists who talk about their time in the fashion industry, their years just absolutely immersed in the corporate fashion world, and then they leave it. It sounds to me that fashion world is both very challenging, but also like the best boot camp for going and founding your own business. And I'd love you to talk about that journey, how you got into that world.
Yeah, well, it's funny because sewing definitely led me to that world, because I had enough experience through, you know, just being able to present my work in, you know, different 4-H things that I was involved in. And so that allowed me to have the confidence to walk into Nordstrom and get a job on the sales floor. And I knew clothing construction. So, you know, I knew enough about clothing that I could sell it. So that was really my entry point into the fashion industry. And it was only because I wanted, my real dream was I wanted to have my own store back then. So the fashion industry was like, I know sometimes people talk about shadow careers, where, you know, you want to do this one thing, but life kind of leads you into this parallel career. And I think that's what it was for me. It was exactly the experience that I needed, the practical, tangible experience, and allowed me, you know, to get what I needed in order to really have a successful business myself, you know, from even just down to the how to record your sales and kind of the tempo of how you promote and seasons and all of that I learned through working, you know, in the industry. So
well, and the industry is all about trends. And I find it interesting because you're like me, you love old things. And these days you work a lot with old linens and old textiles. So how was it to see sort of things emerging each season, but also having this heirloom quality or this sort of vintage aesthetic in the back of your mind?
I think that's what led me to work in luxury fashion. So my last position, I was retail director for Emilio Pucci, just a beautiful Italian heritage brand, like had been, I think it was started in the right around the war, so like the 1940s or so. So a lot of history and also just the construction and the quality that went into all of the garments was, I would say, an heirloom quality. But on the flip side, it still followed the fashion industry schedule of being very fast. So, you know, I think I kind of landed in the best place possible for working in fashion, as opposed to maybe working in like an H&M where it's every week you have new styles. But I will say that is one of the parts of working in the fashion industry that is very exhausting. You have a new collection coming into the store. You've barely sold the collection that's already there. You go to sales, you know, things get marked down. And it's just this endless kind of cycle of this, you know, every season. And it's exhausting.
And in your role, you were traveling all over the world, essentially, right? Tell me what your role was. Did you present the new collections? Were there language barriers? I mean, how did you work with people in that role?
That's such an interesting question. And so I did get to go to Italy multiple times a year as the buyer of the collection that I would sell in my US stores. I oversaw five US stores, but someone had to go to Italy, look at the new collection and decide how many of this particular style and in what sizes and in what colors for each of the specific stores. So for example, a store in Las Vegas might have a totally different selection than our store on, you know, Madison Avenue, for example. So really being able to understand the clientele in each location and even buying things specifically for a client. It was sometimes down to being that specific. So yeah, really understanding what the buying behaviors is so interesting, and also how to work within a budget, because, you know, you would have to buy, you know, within a certain budget in order to, you know, fulfill the store sales and stay within that budget and all of that. So definitely there were language barriers for sure. I did study Italian for 4 years when I was living in New York. Actually, before I started working for them, I just had a natural love for all things Italian. Part of my family heritage is Italian.
And now you're in Spain. Tell me how this came about. So I know in your story, a few things sort of came to you. You said that you were experiencing burnout, that you had a couple of mysterious allergy attacks, and you also had these voices in your head kind of telling you to do your own thing. So I'd love to hear more about this.
Yeah, this is such an interesting phenomenon to look back at, because I really see it as my physical being was pushing me to move on. But my fears, I think, of like, how am I going to make money? And, you know, everything we're trained to believe, you know, even as an artist, like I was confronted with the belief that you can't make money doing what you love, or you can't make money from your hobby, all these old beliefs that I had, my body was just resisting. And so I had two really bad allergy attacks that I had to go to the hospital in an ambulance. Like my whole face swelled up, and they both happened on Sunday nights before, you know, the Sunday kind of Sunday scaries. And then after that, I just learned to kind of, you know, take Benadryl to prevent them. It was really, really just such a bad moment. And it's funny, a week after I came to Spain on sabbatical, the allergy attacks were gone. They never happened again.
Tell us the timeline. I know you mentioned sort of wanting to transition out of the corporate world. You also started studying web design. How did this come about? Were you still in the States at this point? Had you moved? Was it an online class? I'm really curious because it sounds like maybe unbeknownst to you at the time, the web design fit in really well with your plans to launch your own business.
It totally did. And I think learning those skills was like basically the foundation for me to have my own business online. And the process of going from corporate to working for myself was really gradual. And I think, kind of with that voice, there was just a natural interest in finding out what I was going to do next. And so I think through that search, I stumbled upon web design. I had a blog. I had already started Sewing in the City actually as a blog. So I sort of knew my way around WordPress enough to have a blog. I must have seen an ad or a podcast or something about working as a web designer. And so I did, I found an online course and took that, studied actual coding. So HTML and CSS, I got super nerdy with it. And finally, when I had a little bit of confidence with it, that was actually what I ended up doing when I left my corporate role. So it gave me enough confidence to know that I could make money, even though I hadn't figured out that I was even going to work for myself with Sewing in the City in a full-time capacity yet. So
So you're just doing private clients, working from home, helping them set up their websites, also small entrepreneurs.
yeah, exactly. I started with just working with different friends that had projects to work on, and just was really lucky to kind of pick up clients and had a full roster, and started learning through people and seeing what they were building online. I started learning more about the online world and seeing clients that I was building, their whole online infrastructure, how they were selling their products and what they were selling and all of that. And it was really how I learned how to have an online business. And there was one day where I think it really was like a kind of shot in the dark moment where I had the thought of, why don't I do this for myself? It was like, I'm building these, I have all these skills. And so that's when I finally decided to, hit the gas with Sewing in the City. And take it from just being like a kind of a blog and to being something else.
So smart. I mean, tech skills are something that a lot of people who are creative feel overwhelmed by. Everything you do, your Instagram account, your videos, everything is so well done, and you also have a way of making it look easy.
Most of my reels, all of my YouTubes are all done with a tripod and just, me kind of doing my thing with my phone. I don't even have like a professional camera. I just use my phone for all of my videos, all of my YouTubes. So yeah, it's pretty basic setup, which I think is interesting because you don't have to have all the fancy stuff in order to make sales and make content and share your love and your creativity out there. But the tech skills definitely were something that I think if there is a creative person listening and you're afraid of tech, it's super creative. It's just creativity in a kind of a different way. But building a web page or editing a YouTube video, for example, it's all super creative. It's like cutting and pasting graphics together and designing, a layout similar to a magazine, I would say, kind of building a web page. So I would encourage anyone to give it a try. It's not as hard as it all looks, I would say.
You make everything look easy.
No,
I love
but that's
it. I love some of your posts, how thinking about one in particular, you found a beach towel at Old Navy and you transformed it into a really fun summer outfit. I know I wouldn't be able to do that, but every time you post something, you do make it feel really accessible that these are things that someone could do and without a lot of time.
I mean, I do get comments from people that say, thank you so much. I'm learning to sew with you, or that they feel encouraged. And that just makes me so happy that I can inspire people to just try it, and to maybe think of fabrics a little bit differently, like that towel you find at Old Navy, or that, tablecloth you find at the thrift store could be something really unique. So I love that I get to inspire people in that way.
And you do a lot of upcycling. Lindy Lindy is based essentially on upcycling. Tell us about Lindy Lindy, how it came about.
Yeah, so it again, like, really kind of unfolded in a really organic way, just like my jump from corporate to having my own business. I have always loved, we love old things, and so I think that has been just, a constant. And when I was here in Spain, I started visiting some antique markets and, just checking out what old things were around, like we do, and started stumbling upon antique and vintage and, secondhand linens, tablecloths, things like that. And, just started thinking about, oh, I could make a dress out of that, or, oh, maybe this would be a really nice soft robe. And so it just kind of came naturally out of experimenting and looking at things a little bit differently. Also from the standpoint of wanting to save money, because here fabric stores are rather expensive. And so, to buy 3 yards of fabric for a new dress is kind of expensive. And so that kind of savvy part of me looking for different ways to do things in a professional way and also create things that no one else has. So.
Well, I know as someone who goes to antique flea markets and estate sales, I see linens. And so often, I think back in the day, people would be gifted with these beautiful sets and they'd sit in a drawer and they almost felt like they were too beautiful to use. So you find in these incredible hand embroidered or even Irish linen tablecloths that are almost pristine. They may smell a little bit old, they may need a little cleaning, but they're like they have never been used.
Exactly. It's incredible. And especially the wedding sets that were made are just absolutely gorgeous. And you think about all of the love that went into every stitch and the planning and the time to create these beautiful pieces. It is incredible.
Well, I love how it feels like you've come up with something very new and special. I mean, I know the bridal industry is oversaturated. I mean, there's everything out there you can think about, but you've come up with this idea of these beautiful getting ready garments, maybe what would have been once called the trousseau, and they're made to order, so no one else is going to have the same one. It's a vintage piece of linen that no one else will probably ever find, and the whole idea is just wonderful.
Yeah. And also in the fashion industry, there's a lot of one of the biggest problems is the excess stock. And so it's also like a way to for me to be involved in the clothing industry in a way that I feel really good about. I'm not overcreating. I'm not, necessarily like pushing over consumption. It's something slow, beautiful. It's an heirloom piece that we can take something that is sitting in a drawer and make it usable and make it really special and make it a part of this, moment of someone's life that they can still use it day to day, or they can, pass it down to their daughter later. But it takes it from the drawer and makes it something actually usable.
So if someone is interested in having you create something for them and you're connecting with them, say they're in the States, you're in Spain, do you send them photos of samples of different fabrics available? How do you connect with them to get a sense of what they're looking for?
Yeah, so I have a whole section of linens that are already available, and then a set of certain styles. So we can say this particular linen, I know by the size of it, I know exactly what style and up to what size I can make it out of. And so it's kind of a selection process of like, okay, I love this particular linen and I like this particular style. Okay, let's put those two together and make it in your size. And then just ship it out to you.
And are your customers located in the States, in Europe, around the world?
Yeah, mostly in the US. I feel like I think Americans, well, because also I'm an American, I think that I just understand the sensibility. And I think that Americans also kind of get the upcycling trend, whereas maybe Europeans, like some people that I, know locally, don't quite understand what I'm doing, because for them, they don't see like the value, I guess, in the linens. Whereas for us Americans, it's something really unique. And I think we've bought into the upcycling a little bit more than Europeans have at this point. So I think also with Americans, kind of this idea of having something really unique for your wedding is something that we just get. So
Tell us about the building your studio was in. It has to be a historic building.
yeah, it was built in 1940. And it's right, right around the war. It's a really beautiful building. There are eight apartments in it, and it's right in the center of Valencia. So the original family that built the building, it was their grandmother that lived in the apartment. So I'm pretty sure she'd lived there since the beginning. So it has all of the original flooring, original ceilings. Each of the rooms has different ceiling decoration. I feel like I landed in just the right spot for me,
And the
even
natural
sidewalk.
light. You have such amazing natural light.
Yeah, that's one of the first things that I noticed when I saw the photos of the apartment before I even visited was, wow, the light in there is so beautiful. It's something I'm always, as artists, I think no matter what your medium is, we're always kind of looking for the light,
Well, I'm thinking about your story. You offered some words of wisdom to somebody who might be considering opening their own business, and said, just don't overthink it, just start. Tell me a little bit more about this.
I mean, I think that I see people that talk to me about their creative ideas. And I think as creators, we can sometimes kind of get in our own way. I know I do, and I have so much. And when I look back at when I, made the jump from 9 to 5 to working for myself, I always think I could have started so much earlier and I could have kind of done both for a while. So it doesn't have to be this big black or white moment. You can just get started now. Just like start really small. Start with what you could do in an hour after work, every day.
That's a really good point. I think a lot of times we think of it in black and white. And if you just thought of it as, I'm going to start a little side business in addition to my 9 to 5, it takes a little bit of the fear out. I'll give, like you said, I'll give some time after work, I'll give my Saturdays. And then that's a way to ease into it. And many people we've featured in the magazines will say that they did that for a long time and finally could transition out of the 9 to 5 into full time, into that side business, as it becomes their full-time business.
Yeah, and it's kind of what I created with, web design that was on the side for a really long time. But I think you can just stay in your 9 to 5 and create as you go. I think it also creates an environment of stability, which sometimes can, for me anyways, can help me not have fears around, will this sell, or I need to make money to pay this month. It's kind of gives you that incubator to just create as you wish and not have to worry about, have that pressure of the bills.
Is there anything you miss about the corporate fashion world?
Yeah, I think I definitely miss my friends and the community. I think, it's so fun to go to different events and see people within the community and what different brands were doing. And just the excitement of it. There was a certain fun to that. And
Sort of
it
an
wasn't easy.
unveiling of things, when a launch, and it's like, yeah,
Totally. Yeah. But I think the creator community has very similar features as well. It's just a little bit, takes a little bit more initiative to kind of plug into those places. But yeah, I think, there's this idea I have of the fashion industry that probably isn't true now because so much has changed in the last, 5 or so years. But the good old days of fashion were definitely so much fun, and I'm really, really glad I got to experience that.
I love about you is that you model your own designs. And so you know how comfortable they are, and you know if they work, because it's not like you're creating them and just sending them to the world. You're testing them, you're living in them.
Yeah,
Right.
and I'm making them as well. So like I write all of the instructions for my sewing patterns. I write them all. Like for example, I just launched a new jacket about last week actually. And I had been wearing that jacket for 2 years because for whatever reason, I just couldn't quite get it right, the pattern to launch it. I ended up adding a vest option to it, and that was the kind of the final touch it needed. But the jacket I've been wearing for 2 years, and people would ask me, when are you going to launch that jacket pattern? And it just wasn't quite ready. But so I had 2 years to perfect it.
I love it. And I love how people who buy your patterns put their own spin on things from time to time and share their photos, right? And
I'll never forget the first time on Instagram when someone tagged me on something that they had made from one of my patterns. It was so exciting just to see like what people do and the different fabrics that people will use and how they style it. It really is just like a base for people's creativity. They get to take the pattern and, you know, make it as they, in their vision. So it's so cool. So cool.
And they become part of your community, right? I'm sure you have a community of people who chat amongst themselves on your Instagram feed and love sort of have gotten to know each other through you, correct?
Yeah. It's like the community is so amazing. It's positive. It's encouraging. It's creative. On my Instagram, even on my YouTube, it's just, you know, sharing ideas, sharing feedback, asking questions. I really just love the sewing community. I think especially on Instagram, everyone is so supportive and, you know, really sharing of techniques, sharing of information. It's very positive.
I'm thinking about your story and when you talk about entering competitions and thinking about your mom taking you to meet designers you looked up to. And what does she say? What does she say about your journey? She must be so proud. And she probably says, you know, I knew all along, right?
She is seriously my biggest supporter. She watches all my YouTube videos. My dad as well. And yeah, I think she tells me all the time how proud she is and how you can just tell that you love what you do. Like you, there's so much like happiness, and it's really, you know, for someone like my mom to reflect that back to me, it's amazing. It really, I think that there's no better compliment to receive, you know, it really feels like I'm in the right place. And also just looking back at all she did to support my love, you know, from just letting me use her sewing machine when I was really little, you know, to buying me all the fabrics I wanted and taking me places. And, you know, just really, I couldn't ask for a better supportive environment to have grown up in. And it's definitely why I am where I am and get to do what I get to do.
I love it. And do you ever make clothing for your mom?
I do helped her make some like kind of like shorts that she wears when she's gardening with pockets. So yeah, she's a big quilter. So whenever we're together, I'm usually kind of experimenting with quilting. So she has the long arm quilting machine. So she's got like the pro setup. So whenever I go to Seattle, I just love, kind of dipping into quilting with her.
Back to what you said about your mom saying that, you know, you seem to really be loving what you do. That positivity really comes through. It comes through and like every photo of you wearing one of your new creations or every video, you come through as so sincere and just you love creating these different things and showing other people how to do it themselves. And I love that.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised you have a big following. I'm not surprised.
Oh, it's so fun. And I think that it really is kind of the proof, I guess, that when you do what you really, 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 really love, it works. You know, the universe kind of finds this very woo-woo, but I think that, you know, we always find a way to do what we love, even though for me, it took me 15 years of working in a different, you know, different capacity to get here.
Well, it has been really, really special to be able to talk with you today. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to feature your story in our spring issue of What Women Create. It's now at newsstands.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. It was so lovely to get to chat with you and to everyone listening.
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.